there's a story which is told about the Chida. The Chida, an earlier Sephardi leader, there was a story which is told the following. In those days, kashrus organizations didn't work quite the same as it used to work, as it works today. It's not exactly the OU, the OK. So a gentleman came up to the Chida and said, I'd like you to give a hechsher for my cheese. And as it happened, his cheese was not of satisfactory status. There was the ingredients, the way it was done, in fact, he felt that it was treif, not just questionable. And so therefore he was reluctant to give the hechsher. So in response, the gentleman just simply explained to him that he would harm the Chida's family if the hechsher was not going to be given.
I guess very little has actually changed.
And and so the Wild East, and under this threat of harm, what the Chida was, he wrote a hechsher. In those days, the hechsher wasn't given based on. A hechsher wasn't given just simply as a stamp. What happens is each person who would give it would write a little note saying his approbation to this product. So what did he do? He wrote an approbation to the cheese, and he finished it with the following line. He quoted a pasuk in Parshas Bo, and it says, "V'kacha toichlu oisai masnechem chagurim." You shall eat this with your loins girded, meaning a sense of excitement. This is talking about going out of Mitzrayim and eating the Korban Pesach. At the end, he wrote Shin Mem Vav Tav, Shmos, but he put an apostrophe in the Shmos. And so, what happened was the cheese circulated; it reached Tzfat. And there was a particular leader over there, a particular rabbinic figure, who looked at this and in the moment, upon looking at it the first moment, realized there was a problem, had the man arrested who sold it before anything could happen, and they found out that it was through admittance that this was in fact the case. What happened? Shmos, the Chida doesn't waste even an apostrophe. An apostrophe means to say it's an abbreviation. Shmos is the acronym for Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum, which means he was directing everybody to look at the translation in Aramaic of that pasuk, which reads as follows, if one goes to the Aramaic, Ukadein teichlun yosein, so you shall eat it, charetzechon yohon asirin. Your loin should be asirin. Asirin literally means girded, but also asir. And therefore, in a very subtle manner, the Chida was able to relay his concerns to those who knew better via that simple apostrophe in the Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum, which, by the way, just to take it one step further, is the Baal HaTurim, in fact, understands that the first words of the book of Shmos, Ve'ele Shmos B'nei Yisrael B'ayim Mitzrayim, if I'm not mistaken, the way he understands it is, let me just give you the exact, just one. Baal HaTurim says the following, Rosh HaTevos, Ve'ele Shmos B'nei Yisrael, these are the Rosh HaTevos, and by the way, if you weren't the Baal HaTurim, you wouldn't be able to do this. V'adam asher yilomed haseder ve'ele, a person who learns the set structure of Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum, v'kol na'im yashir, and he'll sing with a beautiful voice, yich yashanim rabbos v'arukim la'olam. That's how he understands is the acronym of ve'ele shmos b'nei Yisrael. So, meaning that he was able to see within that framework, just extending the shmos, Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum, he has the entire precedent of v'adam asher lomed haseder ve'ele, Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum is Shmos. B'kol Na'im V'Yashir. B'kol Na'im V'Yashir. Yichyeh Shanim Rabos V'Arukim El Olam, which is B'nai Yisrael. Incredible. All right there. So what I'd like to do is with you in the next few minutes is the following. What we studied last week was, we studied the notion of specifically, what about Psukim which don't have Targum? As a halachic detail, we discussed the time frame of it. Today I'd like to discuss the significance of Targum in and of itself. And then finally, the reasonings behind this mitzvah as a whole. And then we'll pull it full circle and get a greater and more global perspective. So, without much further ado, what translation should you use? We're told you have to read the Torah twice and then translate it once. So what do you translate it into? So Tosfos presents two possibilities. There are two possibilities which exist over here. This is in source one. Shnai Mikrov Echad Targum, Yesh Mefarshim, says Tosfos, there are those who explain, Shuvuhu Adin Lelo Azos Belaz, Shilohen. Those who speak Laz. What's Laz?
Common language,
right? Common language. And Rashi says Laz, he was referring to?
French,
right? So because that happens to be, the lingua franca over there. But it could be any language of the country. It's like, it is like a targum. Why? Not because it just translates, because it mafaresh. It explains it sometimes. Ki kamosha targum mafaresh la'amaharetz, I think that is. Kachem avinim etoichalaz. To a person who's not necessarily learned, when they read the translation into whatever language it is, they will gain a greater grasp of what the concept is. So therefore, that's what the targum was trying to facilitate itself. So targum doesn't necessarily mean just specifically Aramaic unculus. It could mean, in the view of Tosis, any language which enlightens the understanding. However, Tosis concludes v'lo nahira. This is not clear. I don't appreciate this. Sharei atargum meforesh b'mesh ein lilmoid min ha'ivri. Apparently, the targum, when you look at the unculus on the side, it's not just telling you that which you wouldn't have understood from the Hebrew. I'm sorry. It tells you. It does tell you which you wouldn't be able to just understand from a regular Hebrew. As is expressed in many places, Rav Yosef says that if we didn't have the translation of this pasuk, I wouldn't know what to say. I wouldn't know what it's really talking about. And you shouldn't have to repeat the pasuk a third time in the absence of Rashi. Rather, do the Targum. Now, we're just saying something interesting, just as a case in point. I mentioned this to one or two people who were involved in the Shir yesterday. It's just a case in point from last week's parasha. The Torah says that Yishmael is blessed with Yado Bakol V'Yad Kol Boy. Now, what does that mean? You can translate that into English, French, German, whatever you want to do, but you're not going to get a sense of what that really means. What does the Targum translate that as? The Targum says that Kol Enashot Tzrichim Lei V'Hu Tzorich L'Chol Enasha, meaning he needs everybody, and everybody needs him. Which, by the way, is a very succinct estimation of what the Arab world is today. First today in terms of the oil, and then early on in the silk trade, there's interdependence. Now, what the translation is doing there is not simply translating the words of Yodo Bakol V'Yad Kol Bo, it's actually giving light. It's actually giving you something more than you would have in a natural translation. Just as an example. So therefore, Tosis argues that, what should you stick to? Simply Targum. Simply the Unculus, because Unculus is doing something for us which we don't necessarily have. But it might be even deeper than that. So the Targum, Unculus, may have a greater depth to it. And that is when do we get the Targum? When did Unculus appear on the scene? Well, let's date it. Unculus lived... Right, so we're talking about first or second century, maybe even a little earlier. He was the nephew of one of the Roman emperors, right? He was Unculus, is in fact a Roman name, right? And he converted to Judaism. It's a beautiful story of how he did so. So that's where it seems to appear on the scene. However, interestingly enough, that might not be the first time that the Targum appears on the scene. Although he's the one who's attributed with having translated it, apparently we see that it predates him. The Gemara says, this is the Gemara that actually the Tosfos is quoting in the second source, V'omer Rabbi Yirmiyahu v'itzayim Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, it is quoted the following, Targum shel Torah Unculus Hager Omroi, that the Targum of the Torah, Unculus the convert, said, Mipi Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yeshua, from the sayings of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Targum shel Nevi'im, if you look at the translation of the prophets, Yonasan ben Uziel Omroi, Yonasan ben Uziel said it. Yonasan ben Uziel was a student of Hillel. Hillel HaZaken was the primary student of Hillel HaZaken. So living around about the same time. Mibi Chagai Zechariah Melachi. He said it based on the teachings of Chagai Zechariah Melachi, who were the last of the Nevi'im. Right, so these are the last of the prophets. So apparently, Yonasan Uziel transmitted that tradition in his translation on Nach. And by the way, when you read the Targum Yonasan Uziel, it's more expansive. There's a lot more going on there. You need a translation just to understand all the concepts he's introducing. When he gave over this translation, apparently there was a huge commotion. Whether this is literal or physical, but it sounded like there was some sort of earthquake because of his giving over this translation. What happens? Yotzeh Baskol v'Omra, a heavenly voice appeared and questioned, Mihu zeh shegilo sisrai levonai? Who revealed my secrets? Apparently, by saying this translation, it was revealing something which ostensibly shouldn't be revealed. Omar Yonasan ben Uziel Araglov. Omar Yonasan ben Uziel stood up and said, "Ani hu shegilisi sisro choliv ne'adam. I was the one who did it. But galui v'yadol afonecho. It is revealed in front of you, God. Sheloi lichvoid yasisi v'loi lichvoid beis abba. It is not for you, it is not for my own honor, not for the honor of my father. Elo lichvoid chasisi sheloi yirbu machlokas beYisrael." I wanted to just clarify, because as Bible study carried on, and as people would look into the Torah and the Nevi'im further, what would happen is there'd be machlokas, is what really means. So therefore, I transmitted one of the pure traditions into the Nevi'im. The Tirgum Shel Torah Unklus Hager Amra. Is it true that Unklus really said the Tirgum on the Torah? V'ha Omar Rav Ika Bar Avin Omar Rav Chananel Bar Omar Rav. There's a tradition which says, "Madich Siv Yikru B'Seifas Torah Torah Selakim Furash V'Sum Seichel V'Yavino B'Mikra." This is a pasuk in Nehemiah, which is very hard to understand if you translate it. It's talking about when they read the Torah for the first time after this is a spiritual awakening we talked about a few weeks ago. And it talks. It describes in very unusual terms. So the Gemara breaks it up. V'ikru b'sefer Torah Elokim zemikra. They read. What did they read? They first just simply read the text. Then mefurash. What does it mean explicitly? Zetargum. They didn't just read the text. They translated into Aramaic for the people around. V'sum seichel el apsukim. They didn't just read the text. They actually broke it up into psukim. By the way, that's one of the hardest things for Baal Korah. I mean, that's the most important thing, is knowing where the pasuk ends, right? So it's not, there's no punctuation. So they did it in such a way that they stopped at the right places. V'yavino b'mikra, this is the last part of the pasuk. Eilu pisukei tamim. They also included what we call the trop. The trop, by the way, is one of the earliest explanations of the Torah, if you think about it. For all those Balei Kriya people who are involved, you'll notice that a lot of times the trop is actually directing you in a particular way. And there's numerous examples where that comma in the right place gives you a different meaning than if you'd put that Merchot Tipcha, whatever else it would have been. You know, this incredible Divrei Torah, the Gra, the Vilna Gaon understands, just from the very trop itself. It's an interpretation of itself. And these are dated very early, even to the times of Nehemiah. And v'omrila elu musa masoris. Some people say it's the masoris, meaning which letters appear big, smaller dots, and so on. So the problem is that's dating to time of Nehemiah. When did Nehemiah live? At the beginning of which bias?
Second.
He lived the rejuvenation of the Second Temple, what we call the Second Commonwealth in academic literature. Right. So we're talking about Shivas Tzion, which is well over 400 years before Unklus even lived. So if he's talking about something which seems to be a tradition at that point in time, so then Unklus wasn't compiling anything new. So the Gemara explains, Shachachom v'chazrum v'yistum. That at that point in time it was forgotten, that tradition was lost, and he re-established it. He obviously looked into this, he spoke to the people necessary, re-established the tradition. So that's interesting. So what you see over here is not simply, this is interesting now over here, we're connecting the translation that we're doing not just to something which is very explanatory. We're saying that it also has prophetic tradition. Do you see that? What this Gemara is effectively saying is that when we're reading this translation, it's prophetic tradition. Now, let's take a step backwards to Tosos. So when I'm translating it into Spanish, whatever language helps you read it, you may have the explanation part of it, but you don't have the prophetic part of it. You don't have those aspects which Unklus was tapping into, where he was recoalescing a tradition part of centuries past. So that's perhaps why Tosis is more hesitant to go in the direction beyond the Targum itself. Yes.
But when the Gemara says that the translation is Mipnei Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yoshua, which is not a direct process, it's a Masorah. Undoubtedly, there was nothing Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Yeshua were saying on their own. It's what they heard from their Rebbeim.
Correct. I was wondering about that.
It's a reflection of the tradition. So does that fundamentally differ than someone who is a Talmud Chacham, who is following in the best traditions, who writes a translation in a language that's more familiar? Again, it's not being done, some guy is just going to translate it. It's using the best of whatever we have, and our rabbinic tradition writes a translation. Again, it's supposed to, you know, translate and explain, but using, you know, it's not like that. Unculus, at least something from the Gemara that implies that Unculus had some sort of particular divine inspiration when he wrote it. He was just using
it may be in a combination. It may be that he spoke to all the leaders of the generation. He went to the oldest people of the generation, and he said, "What do you remember from?" and he spoke to them, and with prophetic and with some form of Ruach HaKodesh, he was able to coalesce it. But you're right; it's not 100% over here clear what it means when you speak to them. But the way it seems to be described over here is that there was a tradition they were tapping into. These must have been the people who were still the holders of that tradition, and he was the editor. He put it all back together again for us. Yes.
I don't know if there's an explicit Gemara or just some understanding, but I seem to recall, maybe it's Gemara and Dorian, Targum was actually giving it scenes.
Yes. So in fact,
that would indicate that to respond to Dr. Huberfeld,
even for earlier.
It's not that maybe Ruach HaKodesh. In other words, it was given, that's why it's given such high status. In other words, it's not
Absolutely.
A translation. It actually comes from
Stephen. Right, so I want to actually get to your point, Stephen, right now. That's the next stage. Is this actual little snippet over here about what Nehemiah says? Is in fact quoting the Gemara in Nedarim that you're referring to, where the Gemara starts off there, Gemara in Nedarim Lamed Zayin Beis, where it says that there are a number of things which are halacha l'moshe Mi-Sinai, and one of them is this. One of them is the Targum, and there's Kriya Ksiv, Kriya V'lo Ksiv. There's a whole bunch of things which are we have a tradition that they come from Sinai. Now you have to kind of think about that. What does that mean? Was the Torah given in Aramaic? So in that regard, I'd like to just quote to you something very Kabbalistic. But do with what you will, but it gives you a notion of the significance of this. This is a Chasam Sofer over here, who's found in the Gemara in Chulin, just in source 3, but it's very, this is not an explicit idea. It's very hard to understand. He says the following: V'hainush t'sholach Rav Yehoshua ben Levi gimel inyonim, shnai mikravecho targum, v'shirei luchos, menachim ba'aron, v'zehirus v'vridim. Now, I don't know if you remember, at the beginning of this of what we did last week, when we quoted the Gemara in Brachos, there were three things Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi said. And this is where we learned out the importance of doing Shnai Mikra in Matzibur. One was Shnai Mikra. One was being careful with the honor of elderly people, because the broken parts of the tablets were put in the Aron, meaning there's a respect to somebody who's not necessarily in their full comprehensive with their full comprehensive ability anymore. And the last thing was the Vridim, which I just want to make sure I got right over here. The Gemara says over there, it's something to do with the veins, Kadesh Yetzer Adam, meaning you should wait until you shecht the animal so that all the blood leaves, meaning you should roast it until so that all the blood leaves. This is a specific halacha in Shechita. So he says, what's the connection between all these three things which are put in one swoop? He says, Da Targum hu klipas noiga sheneechsa batora al yedei shviras aluchos. That the Targum, the translation to Aramaic, is what's called the Klipas Noga. Klipas Noga requires a lot of backgrounds, but the Klipas Noga in general is one of the four Klipas. There are four Klipas. So there are three of them are what we'll call Klipas de Tumah, which are the lower level expressions or spheres in the world, which come from impure, inholy forces in the world. And the third one is Klipas Noga. That's almost like a neutral Klipa, which is something which could be pulled upwards into purity or fall downwards into impurity. That's what's understood as Klipas Noga. So this, it is the Klipas Noga of the Torah, Alidei Shiras Aluchos. That when the Torah was broken, something was emitted, and that was the Targum. Even though there is the rebuilding of the second tablets, and this Klipas Noga, this we'll call this variable Klipa, which could go in both directions, disappeared, didn't completely disappear. Therefore, what we do is we read the Torah twice in Hebrew and once in Aramaic, which represents it somehow represents that aspect of the breaking of the Luchos. That tragedy which was at the loss of the first Luchos, what do? We obliterate it by reading what is effectively, we're creating a Rav. We're doing a 2-to-1 overruling of that idea, of that tragedy of the breaking of the first Luchos. Very interesting. To take that into a logical format, just this is very hard to understand. This is using a lot of concepts which are not within our regular logical format. This is Kabbalistic. But is the notion that at the first, the breaking of the first tablets, one of the things which was lost was memory, right? We know that apparently when the Torah was first given in its first format, once lost, we lost the ability to be able to hold and comprehend one time. What do? In response, we read it twice again with the hope of incorporating it. It's almost like reversing the effects of the breaking of the first lukos. We want to take that degree. The reason I want to quote this is to you is not to pretend that I understand what this means, but to see that this notion of targum is something which, again, as explained before, is something very deep. There's something very significant about it beyond just simply a translation. Beyond simply a translation. In fact, it relates to why we say Kaddish in Aramaic. Why do we say Kaddish in Aramaic?
That was the language they spoke at the time when they initiated it.
Okay, Ara's presented one approach which Tosfos and Brachos suggests, which is that in order that everyone should understand. However, there's an extreme opposite approach, which is? Excellent, you see. So Tosfos presents two approaches. One is that that was what everybody understood. So we want to make sure that everybody understood it. At the same time, another explanation expressed in Tosfos is that it's such a holy or lofty language that the Malachim were not able to understand it. So the Targum has incorporated into it, there's a duality in the Targum itself. There is something which everybody was speaking. After all, we are in Babylon, right? This is what everybody is speaking at the time. But at the same time, it's also something which has a very holy component. It's almost like the shadow of Hebrew, in a certain sense. Dov.
Wondering if Agnon encapsulates this duality of the paradox. When Agnon remarked,
Shai Agnon.
Mishahu Targum Shakran, Mishaino Targum Kanav. One who translates is a liar, and one who doesn't translate is a thief. Agnon was capturing some sort of duality. Labio might be very different than...
Very interesting. Very interesting. I mean, there needs to be a translation, but at a certain point, So at this point, I would actually argue that in the Targum Unculus, it's because it's divinely inspired. It's tapping into a much earlier tradition. There's an aspect of the real truth being revealed at this point in time, where there's tension of being able to try to express what it is. So, but thank you. If you could show this to me afterwards, I'd be very interested in finding out where that quote is. Very fascinating. Shai Agnon. So, Halach Lamaisa, okay. We've spoken about a lot of lofty ideas. Halach Lamaisa, what do we do? So what do we do? Okay, so the Targum is very special. It's got a lot of matters. So what do we do on a weekly basis? So presented in the Shulchan Aruch, if you could turn your attention at the moment to the top of the second page. Im Lomad HaParsha B'Pirush Rashi, Choshuv K'moy Targum. If you learn the Torah with Rashi, it is like the Targum. It's as if you translate it into Aramaic. V'yorei Shemaim yikra Targum v'gam pirush Rashi. But Yorei Shemaim should do both. Why? So the Taz, one of the earlier commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, points out the tension that exists in the Salacha. And that is, Targum v'gam pirush Rashi is in the second paragraph. Ki ha-Targum yesh lo malo shenitan b'Sinai. The Targum has this aspect of it that it was given at Mount Sinai. Upirush Rashi yesh lo malo shumefarish yoser hamikra mimash mefarish ha-Targum hamikra. And the Rashi has the advantage that it explains it more. When you read Rashi, you come out with much more, right? Not just because we're not well-versed in Aramaic, but simply because Rashi is saying a lot more. He's incorporating a lot more of Chazal into the explanation. So therefore, we try to keep both. But, addendum, says the Taz, v'ki b'tur, v'kos b'tur, it says in the Torah, aval imkar b'shar laz, lo. The Torah is very affirming. He says, if you read in any other translation, French, Spanish, whatever else it is, English doesn't work. Ad kan neshana. V'hainu, says the Taz, but that is only, mi sheyachol lahavin b'pirush Rashi, karoi pirush hamikra. That is somebody who is able to open up a chumash, read Rashi, and that's it. Simple. Then he shouldn't be reading the Spanish. Aval mi sheeno bar hachi, a person who that's difficult for, vadai ro'u likros b'pirush ha'matorah, Sheesh Beloshin Ashkenaz Bizmanenu. A person should read it in German. Read it in German. Understand what you're talking about. Kagon Sefer Tseno Ureena. Kavakayotza boy. Kadesh Yavin Inyan Pirush Rashi. That there was a translation in those times called Tseno Ureena. I tried to find a copy of the cover page. It was very hard to find. But it was a.
I've seen it
as well.
Hansko has it for sure.
Fantastic.
My mother remembered when she was a kid.
Absolutely.
That was the standard.
Exactly. The standard was, it was a German translation, Yiddish translation of the Chumash. And apparently, so this says the Taz, if you're not a person who it's easy to read Rashi, then take a look at this. This should be this is the format which is applicable. But yes.
If I'm not mistaken, in a few places, probably more than a few Rashi argues, if you will, with
Yes.
Douglas. So if it's Misinai, how is Rashi arguing with Uncle?
Oh, that's fantastic. A great question. Very good question. I'm not 100% sure in general. I'm not 100% sure in general about that, because, again, we have a Bas Kol over here, we have other Tanaim arguing, do they have their own tradition, which is different? I'm not sure which direction to go in.
Different versions of the Masorah. How do you think we have Machlokas Tanaim?
Absolutely.
They both had.
So therefore, what you're saying, Ari, is that at the point of Unkelus editing and putting together the translation, he was adapting a particular aspect of the Masorah, where there exist other ones of what was actually Seret Sinai. So there's that, and remember, he's at the same time frame as the Chazal that Rashi's often quoting in dispute. So there exists that possibility. But I often wondered about that. Doesn't fully sit well in some aspects, but this requires a greater Torah Shabbal Peshir into how this arrived. So, halacha l'maisa. So, what does one do? So, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Moshe suggests that today, if one reads the Art Scroll Rashi, if one's doing it in English, one's skimming through that, it certainly works. One of the questions which I wanted to actually speak to Rabbi Talibam before giving an answer about is, what about just simply reading the English in the Art Scroll, which is often adapted based on Rashi? Sometimes they explicitly say this, sometimes they don't say this. Does that sufficiently work? I've seen people who say yes, but I want to make sure beforehand in this shul. But the point is that there's clearly two values at stake: the value of understanding, and then the value of also tapping into something which is of a greater lineage and source. Fascinating point. Is that my Aramaic proficiency has certainly increased, not just because of learning Gemara, but also because of learning Targum. So it's almost like a circle. The more Targum you learn, the more you understand it, the more you see it elsewhere, and the more it makes sense and all connects. Now let's put the whole big picture together. That's a detail. Okay? What Targum, which one, what does it mean? That is one detail. I'd like to bring one more detail in and then take a look at the big picture as a whole. The other detail is the following. In pieces or in a whole. So when I'm reading through the Parsha, practically speaking, do I do 1-1, 1-1, 1-1, or do I do whole chunk and then translation? This has there are different approaches within this, but there's a fascinating outcome. If I could turn your attention to the Magen Avraham says does not appear in Shulchan Aruch. He says in the first, this is in the third paragraph there, Kosov Shla. He quotes the Shnei Luchos Abris, the holy Shla on the Torah, who says the following, She Yikra Kol HaParsha Bebeiz Pamim V'Arachach Atar Gomoleo. A person should read the entire Parsha. What's a Parsha, by the way? Parsha is?
Pay to pay.
Okay, exactly. From pay to pay. It doesn't mean to say the parasha as we know it. Parasha, as we, when we call parashas lech lecha, we're talking about parasha as in, wherever you see a pay, it means a full paragraph, and a samach is a stuma, which is a half paragraph break. So between those, meaning from inyan to inyan, a person does the entire thing, gets the picture, then comes back and does the targum. V'kach kosa rashal, so says the maharashal. V'kach mashu megillah. Aval hamalechim chamudois. The lechem chamudois is an explanation on the Rosh, a later posek in the Gemara. He says the following: Posak de yikra kol posak beis pamim betargum aleil. That a person should read each individual posak and the targum on it. V'kach kosa b'hagois. I'm not sure who that is. B'shem ha'ari. V'kach kosa b'ksovim. So it sounds like when they would actually in shul translate. Now, can you imagine if somebody did this today? But in those days, what they used to do is they would read the pasuk, and as they read the pasuk, somebody would translate for the audience in Aramaic, because again, it was the language that we spoke, and then they read the next pasuk, and somebody would translate it to explain, and everybody would listen. Fascinating, fascinating way that it worked. Now, so what does one do? Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky suggested the fascinating following idea, which I think makes so much sense. In his introduction to the Torah, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky on the MS Leyakov says the following. One of the possibilities of reading Shnei Mikra V'Echa Targum is that you're supposed to read it and you're supposed to learn it. Two values at stake. Therefore, the first time I'm reading it, I'm effectively reading it. The second time I'm reading it and translating it, I'm learning it. So therefore, he views it as opposed to two mikra and one targum, he reads it as one mikra and then mikra targum. And therefore, says Rayoko Kamenetsky, you can make a beautiful compromise. What do you do? First time around, when you're reading it, read the whole paragraph. Because after all, you're reading it, you're not learning it yet. Now when you want to sit down and learn it, second time around, you read pasuk, translate. Pasuk, translate. Pasuk, translate. Because you're achieving two goals. You've read the whole thing through in sections. And by the way, this is helpful in terms of the learning as well. Some people are more forest people. Some people are more tree people. Right? Some people are more attuned to the details. Some people are more attuned to the big picture. So he says, get both. Get the big picture. Get the details. Put it all together into one. Into one.
It's a common learning technique. Just give the material. Get the overview, and then come back. And
exactly.
Get the details.
Interesting. It's not one size fits all in terms of the way people, certain people, relate to different things differently. But it's a very fascinating approach, which splits us down the middle, brings a breed of compromise, and is very acceptable today.
Yeah. The thing to do with partial, pay, lepay. Some of them are short.
Yes.
Some of them are very long. I mean, you have Parshas Bullock, for example.
It's the entire thing.
Almost the entire Parsha.
And Vayetze, right.
Yeah, you have these enormous Parshas. Then you're going to get lost.
Absolutely.
In the trees.
Absolutely. So I've heard people say, and there's a practice I do myself as well, is that me'inyan inyan is as well. So let's say you reach the end of a particular inyan, you stop at that point and then I'd find it. So I've heard people say that as well. That's a possibility, yes, too.
A lot of people do it. They do it by the day of the week. So
correct. So as we mentioned last week, right. The Vilna Gaon, who do it on a daily basis, his natural break would be the Aliyahs, which is usually, by the way, a parasha, usually, except in a parasha like Balak, which doesn't have a break. By the way, why doesn't Parashas Balak have a break? Just a general knowledge point. Why does Parashas Balak not have any Sosam or Pesucha at any points? Take a step backwards. Why are there psuchas and stumas in the Torah?
Because Moshe Rabbeinu it's done for Moshe Rabbeinu to...
Excellent, and us.
And to think about it, but...
Okay, so when the Torah was given over to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was given in a way that Moshe Rabbeinu had absorption points. Meaning it wasn't the entire thing slammed down. It was piece by piece for absorption. And therefore there's points for retrospection. What happens? Balak is the parasha of a person who never stops to think. Balak, the language itself expresses a person who never... Can you imagine your car speaking to you, and you just carry on beating it? Can you imagine what the drama? His donkey speaking to him without skipping a beat. He carries on speaking. He doesn't get it. He does not getting it. So he's missing that. Therefore, the paragraphs are omitted to express this way of looking at life. I'd like to walk with you through in the last few minutes here, an overall perspective of why it is that we do this. Why is the Shnai Mikra Vechotagam so significant? Why are we doing this? To put all the details back in perspective. There's a number of reasons which I was able to find. Some of them fascinating, some of them in practice, some of them out of practice. The first one is very enigmatic. I like your help to unwind this one. The first one is the Prima Godim. There's an explanation called the Mishpat Sois Zohar. The Prima Godim has two explanations on Shulchan Aruch. One explaining the Taz, and one explaining the Magen Avraham, Mishpat Sozov and Eshel Avraham, based on the earlier commentators, and he says the following: Hatam Shechivu Chazal Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum. Why was there an obligation to study Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum? Keneged Ke Sinai VeOyel Moed UMishn Torah Hoya BeHeir Hetev, corresponding to Sinai, the Tent of Meeting, and the Mishnah Torah referring to Devarim, which was explained well. Mate Moshe. What does that mean? What do you think he means when he says that? Well, what's going on over here? Okay, so one has to first of all look into the sources that he's quoting, the Mate Moshe and the Eliyahu Rabbah, and he says the following: is that the Torah effectively was given three times. Time number one, where the entire Torah was given at Sinai. Then it was repeated and taught from the Tent of Meeting afterwards. And finally, at the end of the desert experience, there was a redoing of the Torah. Mishnah Torah literally means the revision of the Torah, which Moshe Rabbeinu says, and we only have the recordings of the necessary parts, it sounds, but it sounds like it's a repetition of the Torah, Ba'er Hetev, well explained. So what do? We, in our, we'll call it individual receiving of the Torah, receive it in the same way it was given. We have our Sinai and Oyel Moed, we read it, we read our two times the Mikra, and then we explain it well, like the Devarim, at the end, which was to explain the first two givings. So we're patterning, what we're doing on a micro scale is patterning after the actual reception of the Torah in the desert. Very fascinating, very fascinating idea. Stephen, you had further?
No, the morale is too complicated to do in the next 5 minutes.
Okay.
He has a machshava behind.
Okay, so I'd love to hear that as well. I was not familiar with that morale. But this is just a very fascinating thing, is that in a certain sense, you're patterning after something much greater than you. So this is not just a learning technique, this is actually you're tapping into the real deal. Now, more than this, there's a practice, by the way, this next thing we're about to quote, the Ra'avan, if I'm not mistaken, is the son-in-law of Rashi, And he says something which is a big limud zchus on people, because it's a very difficult thing. It does not make its way to halacha, but this is an interesting perspective altogether, which generally is not heard of. He says the following in the second last paragraph on the second page. Lo'olam yashlim adam parshiyos v'matzi v'beis mikra v'echo targum. This is the mitzvah he's quoting. Nearly, this appears to me to be yachid hadar b'krach mari. Who is this referring to? A person who lives in a city. She'en b'loy asara likros b'tara. In such a city, we can imagine a number today that don't have a minion. They don't have a minion, unfortunately. She'tzorich l'chavin hasha she'korin atzibo b'parsha. What should he do? At 10:30 in the morning, roughly, where he knows in the neighboring city where they do have a minyan, they're going to read the Torah, he should pattern what he's doing after what they're doing. Essentially, according to the Ravan, Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum is second tier. It's when you're not able to make it to shul, so what do? You recreate the shul experience. You recreate the fact that it used to be read and translated in shul, right there in your house. And therefore, in today's day and age where we live, we're fortunate to live enough in the five towns, where every second corner has a shul, and there are fantastic minyan out there in Israel. Therefore, one would not be doing Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum according to the Ravan, if you think about it, right? Because you can get tier one. You can get the actual deal, the actual Torah itself in the shul. So we don't do that. Now, This Ravan, by the way, is revolutionary, but it's quoted in the Beis Yosef, but doesn't make it further in halacha. Doesn't make it into for mainstream halacha, but it's a fascinating idea of how his perspective of what this actually means.
What's
it's a
representation.
I'm not familiar. I was wondering that myself. I was wondering that myself. What it means when he says that there are the two readings in shul. I'm not 100% familiar with that.
What sounds like they did Shnai Mikra Vecha Targum and Shul. That's what it
sounds like. It sounds like it, but maybe the next... The next source may be enlightening in this respect. The next,
they
read it twice.
The next source may be enlightening in this respect. Because there's a practice in Shul, which is quoted over here, and the next source, which may be enlightening as to what they're patterning after. This as well is not our common practice, but this is the Sefer HaParis. Sefer HaParis is attributed to whom?
Rashi.
These are practices which are quoted in the name of Rashi. The Sefer HaParis is a very earlier book, very hard to get hold of. This book, he's now describing Shabbos morning. Okay, so he's describing what your Shabbos morning should look like. He says the following. Mashkimim lebeis haknesses. You should arrive early. Important point. Ledivrei shiros lepsuke dezimra. To start off with the pesukah dezimra, start off the davening at the beginning. Ulaharich bohem, and to extend in them, meaning to say it in a timely fashion, kefiat zorech, as necessary. Kedei likros kriya shema bo nasa. In other words, that you should make kriya shema at the right time. Good.
Notice they have to make davening longer to make kriya shema.
I don't know.
That's what they're trying to say.
You could do. You could go both ways. Or you could arrive there early enough that it should. You could go both ways in that.
The point is that usually you have the problem being mikatzer, not being mah.
Yes. So he's trying to incorporate everything into this. You should daven the tefillah at the correct time. And then the shliach tzibur should represent the community in front of the teva. And we finish it with a kaddish. Ad oseh shalom, meaning a full kaddish. And then everybody sits down. So now you know where we are in Shaar here. We're about to pull out the Torah. But at this point in time, in Rashi's shul, everybody would sit down, umesajuna parsha dinyana diyoma, and they would read the parsha of that day, beis mikra vecha targum, v'isnami demafsikim bekadish, and then they would matzei kadish, v'isnami lemiasak betanuye, because they were learning, v'inami la'alta moitzi in sefer Torah, or they'd just bring out the Torah. Meaning, before they read the Torah in shul, everybody would sit down, and everybody would read the parsha shnai mikra. Which means, what does this pattern sound like to you? Everybody doing something together silently, and then somebody doing it all together sounds like the Shmona Esrei almost, right? It's everybody doing their private rendition, and then everybody doing the public rendition. That's the way that Rashi had it in his shuls, and it's just an incredible way that it was set up over here.
In Ger, they stop, they learn, and then they have.
Right, I'm sure they're not learning I don't know what I'm sure, but I'm not sure that that is it's a Shnai Mikra point.
It's whatever you want.
Are they still being
whatever you want.
But it
sounds like the same idea.
I'm not clear to me. Not clear to me about that. It could be that it's already that exactly. It's already that practice. Great. Exactly. So actually, on Mark's point, just to come back to Mark saying, we tapped into this a few weeks ago, that. One of the things that shorten another person's lifespan is when a person's offered an aliyah. The Gemara says in the fourth part is that if a person's offered an aliyah and he doesn't take the aliyah, he mekatzer lo shnosov. By the way, as a gabbai, this can be extremely frustrating. When you ask somebody to daven, people say no thank you. But then when you say okay, do you want an aliyah? No thank you. It's not about thank you. I'm giving you something very. It's the way the Gemara says it is ki hu chayecha v'arech yamecha. When a person's offered an aliyah, this is your life. And therefore the Maharsha says when a person turns that down, so to speak, chas v'sholom, a person saying, I'm not so keen on life. You've got to be very careful about this particular thing. Davening, there's halachas about refusal. But when it comes to an aliyah, it's important to accept the aliyah. And what would be the biggest barrier of accepting an aliyah in the good old day is you had to lay it. So what's one of the reasons Shnai Mikra v'chartagum is? Prepare it. You need to be in a position where you're able to prepare it sufficiently that when you're called upon, you don't have to stammer and say, I can't accept this aliyah. Therefore, that's why we said that a person who finishes Shnai Mikra v'chartagum, ma'arichim loy yomim v'shnosov. He gets a long life. Why? Because he doesn't have the problem, he doesn't have the issue of not having to accept an aliyah. That's a third explanation over here.
A, you're having 100 people prepare, you're only having 7 aliyahs. B, why the Targum?
Just in case. Just in case.
And the other is B, Boy Scouts are always prepared.
Right. Yeah, why is a Kohen and a Levi have to learn Shlishi and Shlishi Rabi?
Because you never, you know, everyone can get Shlishi.
Right, it is very interesting. I'm not sure on all the specific details, but it sounds like everybody is in a position where they could be. I'd like to just continue and just finish with the following points. The point is the Pnei Yehoshua, who suggests something which is very fascinating, and he's troubled by a question.
I had the problem, but then the Ravan is relying on the Sefer HaParadeis in his position.
It may be so, exactly. That was what I was suggesting.
Since we don't do that,
we don't do either.
You can't rely on the Ravan.
Exactly, we don't do either. Right. We don't do either practice.
I'd like to. It could be the shot was how they're going to impact Seaboard.
Yes. Yes. Excellent. What they are disputing is what does Imhat Sibur mean, and that's their different explanations. I'd like to close with the following remark, and this is what the Pnei Yehoshua, one of the earliest of the Achronim on Shas, suggests, and he's troubled by a question which is a troubling question addressed by many people of his time, which is the following: we know that there is a tradition that there are 600,000 letters in the Torah, corresponding to the 600,000 souls, that's complete souls that stood at Mount Sinai. At the end of the day, if you count the Torah, there are not 600,000 letters. There's much less. And in fact, somebody did a count, and the Pnei Yehoshua points out that there were about 300,000. So says the Pnei Yehoshua, not taking the approach of the regular approach of the Gra, is that when a person is doing Shnai Mikra Vechar Targum in a certain sense, what are they doing? They are completing the picture of that 600,000 on a personal basis to tap into that bigger picture. In order to be able to tap into that message, I'd like to just send around for just a moment, if you wouldn't mind, just a summary chart of what we've done in the last 2 weeks. Because if we're coming out of this, I'd like it just to come out with something, with what we've appreciated. What we did over the last 2 weeks was, first of all, understanding the source of it. We saw the Gemara in Brachos about finishing it in Matzibur. We discussed why it is that it produces a long life, right? Why is it that Shnai Mikra produces, it gives a person a long life? We discussed the idea of shared mission, the idea that everybody's got their personal mission and the communal mission, and the two is Imat Sibur. That was the Magar Yisrael, which we discussed at the beginning of last week. The next thing we attacked was Atara Sedivon. Why was a specific pasuk being singled out in Parashas Matos? We suggested because either it has no translation, as Rashi says, or its translation is hard to come by. It's an elusive translation. Rabbeinu Bechaya said it was the name of Avodah Zarah. The Torah Tumim said it was not contextually needed in the translation. Four explanations of that Taras Adivon. With a psak is Ramach Milak Rashi to do a, when there's a no translation pasuk at all, to repeat it three times around. We discussed the time frame. We discussed that it was the week. When does it start from the mincha of the Shabbos going till the next Shabbos? What about the next week? Is that too late? It was a machlokes. We pasken that you can go till Wednesday. Failing such, you can go all the way to, as the Hagos Mamoni says, till Shmini Atzeres, which is the catch-all of every year, because that's the completion point of the Torah. We discussed the division of the week. We saw that Rizal did it all on Fridays. The Vilna Gaon did it in a prepared way, one aliyah a day. And the consensus we had was that whenever a person has time is the best time. What we did today was the significance of Targum, the fact that it was given at Sinai, the Kabbalistic reason, and then the idea of Rashi having more of an explanatory point. That Psak was to do both, if possible, Yorei Shamayim, if possible, should do both. But the Torah says, in another language, if necessary. We discussed whether it should be in pieces or whole. The Shlo and the Lechem Chamudos arguing whether it should be paragraph by paragraph, apostle by apostle. Can Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky dividing it down the middle, saying first time full paragraph, second time individually. And finally, the five different reasons we discussed, which were receiving the Torah, that's a patterning after replacement of the Kriya B'tzibah, which was the Raivon, the Kriya together as a Tzibah, which was the Rashi's Shul. We missed out the preparing for, we did the preparing for Leining, and the Dinin Shabbos, we skipped at this point in time. I hope this has been a valuable limud, just this giving, it threshes out, I'm not just telling you, we had a chance to actually learn most of the primary sources, insights again in appreciation. Next week we're going to do a single and smaller topic about creating habits. Looking forward.